Are you ready?
Hey, you think you could tell us what to do? You think you could tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masters. Break it down!
On 1116 SEN, The Ultimate Rap with Tony Shabeki, George Danikian, Troy Zantuck and Emma Nolafrancesco.
We're not going to make too many of those names this afternoon. It's that sort of show. 25 minutes to 6. Hello, welcome to The Ultimate Rap on SEN, brought to you by Jetport Airport Parking, who make parking at the airport a breeze whenever you have to fly. And, of course, the Northern Kia people who are part of the Northern Motor Group at Grimshaw Street in Bundoora. And the word from Northern Kia this week is they start a seven-day sale from tomorrow. So if you're contemplating a new vehicle, that's the time to get down there and see them. My name is George Danikian, and I'm joined by regular rapper Troy Zantuck. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, George. Very excited to be here. It seems like deja vu. We were here at 9 o'clock this morning with Stephen J. Peake.
So that's why it feels like this.
Yes, yeah. But Stephen isn't with us, and I've got to tell you.
Yeah, we're in
sporting,
rare air.
Sporting superstar with us. We've got her on board, and I'm looking forward to having a chat with her for the next hour and a half.
Yeah, let's introduce our new contributor, someone who's pretty used to team sport. She's a former Matilda, and wait for it, the captain of the inaugural Melbourne Victory team, the W League team, Tal Karp. Good afternoon.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. I'll get you nice and close to that microphone so you can just sit there and everyone can go. So that's the person who captained the Melbourne Victory team. And you know, every time I have to say Victory and I'm a city man,
yeah, I know.
It almost makes me feel a little uncomfortable.
I noticed
in my seat.
There's some derision in your dulcet tones there, George. But yeah. Great to have Tal on board.
Oh, she's fantastic.
Thanks welcome,
so
Tal.
Thank you very much.
You're great not playing any here. Football these days.
No, not playing any football anymore. Unfortunately, I'm coaching a kid. That's a battle.
Really?
Yeah, that's it. Law is my new football. Can I say that?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So you're kicking around doing a bit of law?
Kicking around doing a little bit of law, yeah. Okay. White line fever in the courtroom.
Did you ever suffer from white line fever or the red mist when you played?
I don't know. What do you think? Looking at me, do I look like a white line fever kind of person?
I'd go definitely.
Really? Really? We just met. Troy.
Yeah, I know.
What sort of impression have I given you?
I just think, Tal, that you would have been a bull at a gate.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing.
I would have thought,
should I take that as a compliment?
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I would have thought as a captain, you wouldn't put someone in there who was susceptible to being easily manoeuvred or outmaneuvred. I would have thought she's the cool hand Luke type.
Does Kevin Musket ring a bell?
Actually, you might like to elaborate on this because you and Kevin were both captains of your respective Melbourne Victory teams.
Yeah, I had the good fortune of captaining at the same time as Kevin and, you know, learnt a lot from him, but not everything from him.
Okay.
In fact...
You cherry-picked, Tal, did you?
In fact, we were with Kevin Musket only the other night.
Was this Bentley Greens?
It's true, yes.
And how did the night go?
Really enjoyed it. It was great listening to Kevin, great listening to George. Do I get brownie points for saying that on the
radio? Absolutely. George, you'll have
and
you back next week.
Right, have you got my back now?
And the cheque will be in the mail.
Right, okay, there will be a cheque in the mail. You hear that? Yeah. I didn't realise that.
So he put on a masterclass, did he, as an MC?
He did all right.
He did okay.
You know, I'll give him some tips later.
I was going to say, the thing that I enjoyed most was how much Kevin was delighted to be in the company of Tal, because they clearly had spent some time at the club together and it meant the world to him. We had some lovely young girls, also part of the under-14s team at Bentley Greens.
Yeah, it's great to see that they've got three teams now and really building their base of women and girls.
And they want to have a women's team.
Yes.
You know, later in the next couple of years, they've got a target. I think it's the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, that's right.
They want to be there. They want to be contenders. They want to be champions. They've already made quite an impact with their men's team and their juniors from under nines through the under 20s. So well done to Johnny Anastasiades and the troop that make up the Bentley Greens. How did you cope with all the questions?
Oh, look, there weren't too many. I think you asked me what position I played and that was pretty much it.
No, there were others asking questions. You're just now skimming over that.
I'm pretty sure I gave a bit of a monologue, which I don't mind from time to time.
What I think I liked most was you gave the youngsters something to you know, put their hat on. It was great.
Oh, thank you.
You gave them something to remember, something to take on board. Mm. And tell us what it was like for you. Let's, for those who weren't at Bentley Greens the other night when we were doing the fundraiser and their big jersey night, trying to raise some funds for the club for their new season, you talked about your early days and what this road to playing football meant to you, and we're talking about the round ball code. Mm. What was it like for a young sand groper growing up in Perth and thinking that there might be a role for me someday to play this game at the highest level?
I was waiting for the bit about Perth, but thank you very much for that.
No. Take us back. Take us back. What was it like?
I rely on all elements of history through my mother, and my mother tells me that, and I recalled this little bit of history while I was on the stage at that event. I was 7 and I was watching World Cup reruns on the telly, and apparently I was sitting on the couch and I was really getting into the game. I had these chubby cheeks, no different to what I've got now, boys.
No, don't look at me. I'm not going to.
And at some point, in a fit of excitement, I jumped to my feet and I told everybody in my lounge room that I would play World Cup soccer, which was very embarrassing.
Wow.
And even more so embarrassing because my mother caught that on videotape and continues to
show
anyone
it's
that
on
has
audio.
That is
ever
so precious
to me in my life. But the point of that story and sharing that story at the event was to say that at that very young age, 7 years old, wanting to play the game, I got so excited about the game by what I saw on telly. I saw men playing on the telly. And then I wanted to put that into action.
And you didn't
to my
distinguish between you and the men. Interesting, isn't it?
I had no idea there would be any difference. And that was the clincher for me. I didn't realise there would be difference in opportunity for me being a girl as opposed to the opportunity available to my brother.
But the amazing part of that tale is that you actually realised that dream. As a 7-year-old, you got to strut your stuff on the world stage.
I did. So in 2003, I did achieve that dream of making it to the World Cup, and my mother did bring out that video to embarrass me in front of everybody I knew yet again, but it didn't dampen my enthusiasm.
Good on you, Mum. Well done.
It was definitely.
Well, you played 27 times for Australia, and you said earlier before we came on air, you didn't think that was much of a tally. And we think, we're very happy to argue with you. We think it's a terrific effort, understanding too that you've gone on and had a legal career. You've gone on and become a professional, a lawyer, and sport had to take a second chair there. Just give us an idea of how hard it was in those very early days to find and follow your dream.
Look, it was really tough because, as I said, from the television or whether it was the coaches or the infrastructure available, the message that was being sent to girls of my generation was that football wasn't a game for us. So I went down to my first local club and I was told to go and do something more gender appropriate, play with my dolls, go do some cooking, something I've never liked.
More gender appropriate? Was it put in those terms?
No, something girlier, I think, was the phrase.
Sensational.
You know, so I wasn't able to play in that first in that first club, and I had to wait until the team didn't have enough players before I got my chance, proved my way, and was able to remain in that competition and boys' competitions for the next 10 years.
I bet, did they complain to you at the time that they didn't want you to play because they didn't have change rooms for you?
I feel like you've heard my story before, George.
I've heard that story said by so many other
George
people.
George was paying attention.
Before we go any further, let's take a break. We have a number of commitments, and between now and 7, we're going to catch up with much of the sports news, which is making headlines. Should add, we have Tal Karp standing in for Emma, who couldn't make it this weekend for the very simple reason she's out there supporting and doing what she does best, and that is reporting on the supercars. A little bit later on in the program, we're going to find out what's happening in the world game with Max Rushton, who's from Sky Sport in Britain. Locally, though, there is the smell of a revolution in the air. I hear that a number of clubs have been stirring the pot over the last 24 to 48 hours. There is a suggestion that the governing body down under, the FFA, will need to act to keep a host of these dissatisfied stakeholders from actually jumping ship. Is it possible? Do you think that something like this could happen? We're going to find out. We're going to catch up with Tom Callis a little bit later on, who's one of the organisers of a big meeting coming up tomorrow night in Melbourne, which features, I think, 81 of the disgruntled NPL clubs. Can you imagine? Is it possible that for the first time?
81? Yeah. That's a big number, Tell, isn't it?
Significant, very
significant. And getting them on the same page? Wow.
Yeah.
Can it be done?
Well, we'll all find out. They all want to have, of course, a bigger say. Everyone wants to have a bigger say these days. Yeah? We gave them social media and they all want to have a bigger say.
It's a bit the way this show operates too, Tel. I'd like a bigger say, but right. Whether you get one or not.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
You got to put your hand up.
Have you got a game plan about how you can change this?
Well, this will be good. Let's ask Tom that question when the time comes.
Yeah.
To find out if there is any veracity, we'll have to catch up with Tom Callis. Okay,
that's coming up.
Listen, tell us what you think. Mm. Was it 94291116 or what's our SMS number if you want to send us a message?
0433 98 1116.
Yeah, if you want to talk promotion, relegation, yeah, or a national second division, give us a buzz. Tiffany Cherry will come up a little bit later on, update us on the AFLW competition, which, can you believe it, it's ending next weekend.
Yeah, the big GF.
What have you made of it?
It's come and gone so quickly. Yeah. It's been amazing. I've loved it. I've got my first ever Sharon. It's about 3 weeks old. I'm totally caught up with the revolution.
Wow. It's one you over, Tell.
Oh, look, I still have great fondness for the round ball game, but I've got a great new appreciation of AFL through the AFL.
Are you sure it's a Sharon? Are you sure you didn't sit on one of your old footballs and it's just gone oblong?
I've got to say the shape, it's difficult to get my head around, really.
Now, I asked Tell.
You're not allowed to head it, okay? It hurts. The Sharon really
not
hurts.
Literally.
I did ask Tell a leading question in the green room, George.
Oh, did you?
What was the question?
Is this like a legal...
Is there a chance that she could...
Oh, no. She wouldn't go to the dark side.
No.
You would? Would you?
I could see myself going down to a training session for a local AFL team. I could. It's so exciting.
Let's change the subject really quickly. there's a guy who's been doing a great job for the Ultimate Rap over the last few weeks, and he is so good we keep calling him up. His name is Mark Sefulis. He loves talking tennis. In fact, he knows most things about tennis very few other people know about. But I want to know, before we get to him, has he paid his phone bill and will he fall out of any...
We've had a few problems, with Mark's phone line of late, let's hope we can get some clear air tonight.
Maybe he needs to update his phone. Mark Sefulis, are you there?
I am here. Thanks very much for the introduction. I'm really looking forward to hopefully staying online for the entirety of the season. It's going to be good.
Say hello to Tel Karp.
Yeah, Tel, welcome to the show. And I've been listening to the last few minutes, and your story is really impressive. And it's actually interesting because tennis is such a gender-friendly sport that, it's good to hear other stories like yourself, Tel. So, well done. And congrats on your career and also your post-career. You're doing a good job, it sounds like.
Oh, thanks so
See,
much.
I told you Mark's a sweetie.
Yeah.
Despite what George said about Mark, I reckon he's a great guy.
Yeah, Mark, don't believe a word that is being uttered, all right? It's 8 minutes away from 6 o'clock. You're on SEN. It's the Ultimate Wrap. We're about to talk tennis with Mark Sefulis. And we've got Tel Karp in the studio and the infamous Troy Zanturk. And the first thing that Troy wanted to ask Mark was, tell us about Nick.
Yes.
Go on, ask the question.
Revealed he almost walked away from the game at the end of 2016, Mark.
Yeah, it's interesting news coming out this week out of Indian Wells. He did a press conference about last year and just how he was in a really dark place in his career and his life. And nearly walked away from the game. Being 13 in the world, you'd think things were going pretty well. But, we don't tend to know what happens in the background of a lot of these athletes. And he was in a really dark place last year, but... thankfully, he's had a great couple of weeks, and hopefully he's turned the corner a little bit, and he made the quarterfinals here at Indian Wells just this week, and had to pull out against Roger Federer after getting a bout of food poisoning.
And
Bernie doesn't like the weather when it gets hot. Nick doesn't like all the food he eats. What's going on with this crop of sportsmen and women? Come on, Tal. Are they soft?
I don't know, Tal. What do you reckon?
I wonder whether or not we're placing unrealistic expectations on some of these athletes. That we have these ideals of, the Aussie battler, our superheroes have to combat all adversity. But are we placing unrealistic expectations on these young fellas and women to be more than what they can be?
Well, Ryan Harrison has had to deal with some of that that you just touched on, because he had an incredible meltdown, didn't he, Mark? How many rackets did he break?
Yeah, look, Ryan's actually a good guy, and he's actually
right. How many rackets did he break?
Yeah, let me go down that path. He broke five in the end.
How many do you start with?
I think he started with maybe eight or nine. What? I think he finished not with many. So.
I think he's in the wrong racket there,
Mark. Ooh.
Yeah.
He's creating industry. I mean, people are getting jobs because of what he's doing.
There you go, Mark.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, he gets them for free, so I'm not sure they're going to make too much money with Pavlat. But yeah, poor Ryan had a definite meltdown after he was up in the third set and ended up losing the match and broke all five rackets after the match and walked off the court as if nothing happened. So he's actually quite a good guy, Ryan. I'm a good friend of his, but
so what set him off?
Sorry?
What set him off?
I think it's a tough one. When you're playing such a big event, you have chances to win, and there's a lot of money at stake for these guys, especially outside the top 100. So, you know, if you get an opportunity to take a match, you want to be taking those, and it could be the difference between, you know, $30,000 or $60,000, whether you win or lose. So it is a big difference for a guy sitting outside the top 100.
Look, there's been a rule change that might impact the Davis Cup. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, definitely. The Davis Cup are looking at going down a path of reducing the amount of days they play for and the amount of time. So the men's is tradition.
He's done it again. I do not believe it. I had threatened him with expulsion if he dropped out. We need to pay his bill. Is it maybe we should get up and pay his bill? Mark, what have you done?
Listen, I don't know what's going on here, but if you don't want me on the show, just let me
know. No, we love you, mate. We just think you should smash more rackets or maybe the phone.
I think I just threw the phone. That's a big problem for me.
Take us back to the changes that might impact the Davis Cup.
So pretty much what they're going to go to is a two-day format instead of a three-day format. A lot of the top players tend to boycott the event just due to the length of the event and also the time spent on court. So what they're doing is a two-day event, or looking at a two-day event, and best of three sets rather than best of five. So they're hoping that will impact the top players being able to be available for the ties to make sure they're not getting too tired for their following events.
And Troy's got this gorgeous question that's going to just settle you back now that you've got back
look,
and retrieved
the phone. I want to ask you the most important question.
Go on, ask
the most important question of these 15 minutes, Mark. Yeah. Roger Federer, Tommy Haas and Grigor Dimitrov have wowed fans with a new boy band. Now, tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I wish I actually knew why they were doing it, to be honest. But
is this what happens when you're an elder statesman of the game?
I think so, but look, I mean, we've heard of the Backstreet Boys now. We've got the one-handed backhand boys, they call themselves.
Ah, very good.
Three boys with the one-handed backhand and probably the best one-handers in the game, but they've actually stood around a piano and belted out a nice little boy band tune, which I think you better go online. I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but get online and YouTube it, because it is absolutely outstanding watching those three boys go at it.
I love it. I never thought in my wildest dreams that I would hear that Roger Federer was ever going to be a contender for a boy band. But Mark, you've done it again. You've just given us an insight and an image that I'm going to have to shake my head and try and get rid of.
He's a star. There's nothing he can't do, Roger Federer.
Tal Karp's got something for you. Go on, ask him. Ask him that question you've been dying to ask for the last 5 minutes.
I have been dying to ask this question. Kristina Mladenovic, she's entered the top 20 for the first time. What's behind that rise?
Yeah, look, it's an interesting one with Kristina. She's such a great physique for a tennis player. She's tall, she's lean, really long-limbed, hits a really good ball, and I think just over time she's just gradually gotten better. There's a lot of players that come on the scene really quickly, but Christina's taken her time getting to where she is, but she's done it the right way. She's paid her dues, and it's really, really great to see her inside the top 20 for the first time.
Yeah, that's excellent. And talk to me about the final. Alina Vesnina and Svetlana Kuznetsova. I didn't say that right at all. Talk to me about them.
He'll set you straight. Mark Tsafoulis will set you straight. Yeah. Say it how it should be said.
Just Svetlana and Alina.
Yes. Svetlana Kuznetsova and Elena Vesnina are the two girls. They're both Russian, so it's an all-Russian final at Indian Wells. So it's actually good to see two players that aren't generally in the final very often. And Vesnina's come a long way from being pretty much the last 2 years almost a specialist doubles player. She's now hit the scene as a singles player and makes the final of a WTA 1000 event, which is a very big event on the women's tour. So an all-Russian final in the women's and also an all-Swiss final
Swiss.
Yeah, Federer versus Wawrinka. So they've played a few times, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens. They've had a few altercations in the past, actually. So it's going to be quite interesting to see the Davis Cup teammates and obviously pretty much, I would say, slightly a bit of an enemy on court, each of them. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in that final between the two Swiss maestros.
Roger's wife caused the consternation, didn't she, Mark?
Yeah, she did. She did mention or utter a few words under her breath while...
Mirka.
While Roger was playing with Stan one day. And it was actually just pre-Davis Cup final a few years back where the Swiss won the Davis Cup final. After the match, the boys actually spent close to 2 to 3 hours in a locker room actually having it out at each other and actually had a pretty big crack at each other and said, look, let's put it aside. Let's win this Davis Cup and then we'll sort it out after. So it was quite an interesting event. But, this is a big final for the two guys.
Well, let's see how it goes. Mark Tsafoulis, thank you for joining us. As usual, you've done what you told me you weren't going to do, and that is drop out. So if we do this again soon, I'm going to get you a new phone.
I think so. I'm actually going to try and get a house phone. I reckon mobile phones are just the thing. I reckon the thing of the
They just move around too much, mate. Just move around too much.
Exactly. I'm trying to stay in one spot.
Mark Tsafoulis, thanks for joining us in the Ultimate Wrap. It's 6 o'clock, and we've just got another score in the A-League game between Adelaide City and Brisbane. And believe it or not, I think it's now 2-0. Is that 2-0 or is it only one? Sorry, I was watching a highlight. It's 1-0. So it's at halftime, Adelaide leads Brisbane, which is a bit of a surprise because you would have thought the team with more form was Adelaide. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more from Tal and more from Troy Zantuck. Emma Nodder here. That's how it works. Emma Nodder Francesco is out reporting on the supercars. And Tony Shebeki, if you're wondering, and you should be, he's gallivanting across America with a family, and he's contemplating making a bid for the next presidency in 4 years' time. He's just getting out there and making sure the constituency understands that he's available.
Well, he figures
if they're
that
prepared to import him from Australia.
He figures if the Donald got there, he's half a chance, the Shebekster.
Now, speaking of half a chance, I had a half a chance of getting Tal Karp's name correct. And Tal is in the studio with us, our newest contributor, our newest rapper, and it's with a W, R-A-P-P-E-R, not R-A-P-P-E-R. And I'm reliably informed that I got it wrong. I called her Tal, and it's Tal, as in Jethro Tull. So it's Tal Karp. And I've also been alerted to the fact that on the SMS line, somebody who knows Tal has gone, hello! What have they said? Go on.
This
Let
was in the quiet silence of the break that I informed you of this, George. It says, get Tull to talk about Inward Bound. And without me providing any more information, you are no more the wiser.
What is Inward Bound?
Inward Bound was a race that I did at university in team environments where you drove in a car with a paper bag over your head until you got lost in the middle of the bush at midnight.
Sounds
and
a bit
then you
like
ran
this
100
show.
Kilometres to find
Was this some form of
place?
Hazing that we're not allowed to know about?
Yeah. It's all about initiation, I'm told today.
Wow.
Was the paper bag a good fit?
It's not a good idea to have a paper bag.
Emma, not a good idea. That's what's happening. Wait till Emma Nota Francesco catches up with us and finds out we've got Tal in the studio. She goes, oh, my God. It's part of the Ultimate Wrap Fun. We're going to get a chance to cover a number of sports. Mr. Zantuck is going to take a leaf out of Smokey Dawson's little book and give us a sense of some of the atmosphere that's happening in India at the moment. The Australians, I feel, are struggling to dismiss the Indians in their first inning.
Absolutely, George.
They're just piling on the runs, are they?
Serious worries at the moment. Very hard to get Mr. Pujara out as we speak.
Yeah, well, we talked about the magnificent innings by the Australian captain. He's doing a great job for India.
Absolutely. 171 not out Pujara at the moment. And Saha batting beautifully up the other end, 69. India are 6 for 452.
Yeah, I didn't want to hear
that
score.
They lead by a one run, George, at the moment. So,
speaking of one, I want to know what you made of the efforts last night at Amy Park.
Yes.
What did you think, eh?
Well,
in the A-League?
I thought
Melbourne City.
Tremendous second half by the Melbourne City boys.
Yeah, that's a fair call.
I thought Nick Fitzgerald and Bruce Kamau were electric when they come on as subs. Timmy Cale, obviously, putting one in the back of the net, and he was the catalyst in the first half for Melbourne City's 1-0 lead. But Newcastle did have their chances.
Yeah, it's the old story. In sport, in any sport, I think, when you have the momentum, you need to take advantage of it. If you don't convert, when the momentum shifts, you stand condemned.
Got to put away those chances. That's absolutely right.
What was it like when you were captain of the Melbourne Victory, the inaugural team? What was it like in those early days? Was that some of the drive, some of the thinking in the halftime talks that you would have been leading along with the coaches? Who coached you, by the way, in that inaugural season? You can remember.
Oh, God, you know, I've headed a lot of soccer balls in my
right.
life. This is what I always rely on. Right. I mean, you know, in the heat of the moment, I forget important
you,
things.
You, and you remembered Inward Bound.
I did, but that was so traumatic that it is etched into my
paper bag in hand, too.
No, it's not etched. It's seared into your subconscious. Yeah.
Look, so have you had a pick of three coaches? Who coached you in the inaugural year of Melbourne Victory?
It will go A, B, C.
I was going to answer that first question first and come back to the second question later. And the first question was, what was it like playing for Melbourne Victory in that inaugural year?
Yeah, what was
year?
It like?
And it was amazing because for so many years we'd been involved in different iterations of women's national leagues.
Yep. Yes.
Often they were a week-long state tournament where you just play, you know, day in, day out against all of these other states. And then suddenly we were associated with A-League teams. We had the legitimacy associated with those bigger clubs. We had the people associated with them and we were part of a bigger brand. So for me, I'd retired from international football earlier. I'd given up the game to focus on the law, but it just provided such an opportunity to come back and to, I guess, bring up the next generation with me and to see where we could head. So it was really exciting. And those halftime talks, amazing, amazing.
tell me, you had the added problem, though, when you came back to play for the Victory as their first captain, of still studying and being and working at the law. It must have been extraordinarily difficult to balance your working life and your playing, your sporting life.
It was really tough. I mean, it was tough when I was playing international football. I was balancing a double degree. I was working in part-time work because there wasn't any money at that stage. And we had a huge training load and it was really tough. And I was the team geek who would take her tax law textbook away on international trips while everybody else was watching the telly.
The team geek. I like it.
Yep, definitely the team geek.
What did you earn in your first season of W League football?
If you don't mind George asking.
I think we might have had some petrol expenses.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
But that was a big deal. I mean, for so long, playing for the Matildas even, you just didn't get paid. When we went away...
to Canada and USA?
By that time, we got some fees while we were away, but very small amounts of money. It wasn't a salary. It wasn't a salary such that I would have to move out of the rental accommodation that I had when I went overseas because I couldn't afford the dead rent. So I would move out, I would come back home and I'd start working
That's
again.
Incredible.
There was no money, but it was amazing to get petrol expenses because in the past we used to pay for everything. Those fundraising Freddo Frogs went a long way.
The old Freddo Frogs,
yeah,
eh?
Yeah, time. Caramellos were more successful.
Are you more a Caramello type of girl?
Well,
here?
Others seem to be more Caramello kind of people.
I was more a Birdie Beetle type of guy.
Kind of guy.
Hey, Birdie Beetle.
Just on the W
League. Show bags.
Oh, absolutely, George. On the W League now, how have you seen the transition from when you started, Tal, to now as...
They get paid.
Is it light speed or is there room for improvement?
Oh, there's always room for improvement, but we've seen that there has been a lot of learning. We're now at the ninth season. So we have come a long way, but we've really got a long way to go. We've come a long way in terms of opportunities available. Facilities are getting better. There is a conversation now, and the PFA is helping this, about a career pathway and making sure that girls have access to what they need to become.
You touched on the PFA.
I did.
I'm sorry to intrude. What do you make of their 60 for 60?
Look, I think it's really interesting that a player association is getting involved in this debate. And I
it's real vision though, isn't it?
It is, it is.
Do you want to explain for those who are uninitiated what it means?
What they're trying to do is create a cohesive pathway for women in the game. At the moment, we've got a small, very small pool of players that are receiving money for what they're doing. We've got a very small pool of players that can spend their whole time playing football. And this vision is about making sure all of the structures are in place, that we will have 60 players. So there's sufficient depth in that to make sure that there are 60 players who can play football full time and moving forward into the future, they'll have
and
access
lift
to what they need.
Lift the quality of the game
That's
down
right.
under.
That's
and
right.
more importantly, in the next 4 years, the PFA would like the Matildas to be the number one team in the world. Is that possible?
Well, we're six now, and look at the investment that's gone into that. Imagine a little bit more investment, what we could do.
What did you make of the tournament played in Portugal?
The Algarve Cup.
Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting. 17 years and we haven't been invited to the Algarve Cup, or we've been invited but into a poor pool. This is the first time that we have gone in 17 years and been in a really competitive pool. It wasn't an end in itself. It's really about building for the next competitions, the next Asian Cup, the World Cup, the Olympic Games. It was a useful competition. We played against three strong competitive teams. Sure, there were disappointments, another penalty shootout that we unfortunately didn't succeed. And I think that's an example of what we need to do in the professionalism of the game. We know that when it comes to penalty shootouts, it's about resilience, it's about mental toughness, it's about professionalism and having been in that situation and translating in that situation. And we're competing against teams that have had that, that have those structures that give them those competitive edges that they need in those tournaments.
Did you take penalties for the victory?
I did.
And what was your thought process before you took the kick?
If I had done everything that I needed to do to get myself ready to take that penalty shoot, to take that penalty shot, I was confident stepping up to that mark. So in my head, it was what has all of the things that I've done before set me up to be able to do now. And so I was confident if I was ready.
Do you have a preferred side?
Seeing
you're not going to take any more penalties.
Depended on the, oh, who says?
I well, you said you'd retire. Oh, you want to make a comeback.
I've come back a couple of times now. Who knows? No, I'm a bit too old.
You're not a bit too old.
I can't give away my secrets.
Okay. So you did pick a side though?
I would pick a side.
And you'd base it on the form of the keeper?
Well, it would depend on the keeper's weaknesses as much as my strengths.
And would you scope those weaknesses beforehand? Would you
of course
would you seek it out?
Of course.
Ah, you see, that's why she was captain.
I'm interested to know.
Tal, go for it.
I'm interested to know, post your football.
Yes.
How difficult did you find the transition, waking up one day and saying, I'm never going to pull the boots on again?
Look, there was a bit of an identity grappling set of moments in there, but I think my journey was different to others because I went straight from football to the law, which became my new football. So I went from something that was intense and all-consuming into another thing that required every bit of my energy, that was highly competitive and exciting. So I think my journey was different to others who have left football, whether it was through injury or whatever else, and have found that there is nothing to rely on. And I really think there's a message there for clubs, for associations. What are we going to do to make sure that these amazing people that we're investing in have a future and have the resilience to
have
take that next step?
And I think that speaks for all sports.
I think that's absolutely right.
Yeah. 16 minutes after six, this is the ultimate wrap on SEN. George Danikian, Tal Karp and Troy Zantuck. And we're joined by the one, the only, Tiffany Cherry. Hello, Tiffany.
G'day, team. How are you?
We're very well. We would love to have had you in here. Give us an idea. You had a terrific time yesterday with the AFLW and a terrific game today too this afternoon. What have you... Sorry?
It was an amazing game at Olympic Park. It was basically came down until the last sort of 10 minutes of the game. It was a really close one and... In the end, Adelaide kept their season alive with a come-from-behind win. Fantastic.
And Erin Phillips showed her way, did she?
Oh, she did. She had the most touches, certainly for the Crows, I think it was 21. She had about three marks or thereabouts and as many tackles, but kicked three goals. So kicked, I think, the first goal for the Crows and then finished with two in the last quarter. As I said, they came from behind, so... A captain's game, certainly from her and Chelsea Randall also played pretty well, finished with the ice on her hamstring. So that's a bit of a telling sign ahead of the grand final.
That's no good with the ice. Back to Erin Phillips. I'm so excited about how she's doing. It shows the diversity of backgrounds that the AFLW has really incorporated. Tell me a little bit about where she's come from and what she's looking to achieve probably in the next game.
Yeah, certainly, Charles. Well, she's an Olympic basketballer, Olympic silver medalist, obviously with the Opals. In fact, when I was interviewing her, she was actually about the same height as me, so I felt all right. but look, she's a gun. I mean, her dad played, you know, the top level tier.
Greg Phillips played for Collingwood, played for Port Adelaide.
Yep, and you know, her first love was football. She grew up obviously, you know, with her dad being around the footy clubs all the time, but there was never really a pathway for her. She chose basketball, ended up playing. You know, she plays the Opal. She still plays in the WNBL, and she's a gun. She's an absolute. Like, you've just got to look at her body makeup. She put a lot of men to shame. So.
Oh yeah, sports mercenary, but what a star!
Oh, she's just a star. She can kick it from 50 off about, you know, two or three steps.
She nearly did that as a 14-year-old.
Yeah, well, there you go. And
no, I saw her at Footy Park in front of nearly 48,000, 49,000 people in a charity game years ago.
Yeah.
And she was BOG.
Well, that's it. And she hasn't played, so she's played obviously the last 7 weeks. Prior to that, she hadn't played a competitive game of football for 3 years. Came out and was best on ground for the Crows in their first game. She's a star. So,
her dad would be just chuffed, eh?
Oh, as you would be, of course.
Absolutely. Right? And Mum's probably saying, it's my genes, not yours.
Yeah, something like that.
So what does it mean for the grand final next week, Danny?
Well, we still don't know where it's going to be played at the moment. So the AFL's got a conundrum because good old Adele, who I love, her concert is cutting up the ground at the Gabba, which means it's potentially not going to be in top shape to host the women's grand final. And then the AFL is concerned it won't be ready for round two because we've got the Gold Coast Suns, I think, hosting the Lions at Metricron on the Saturday, the 25th, at night time. So the Gabba holds 42,000, the Metricron holds 25, and they're just wondering what they're going to do. And then someone threw a curveball in today and said, well, maybe they'll take it off Brisbane and send it over to Adelaide.
Ooh.
They'll probably get 30,000, but I reckon the Brisbane fans will turn feral, as you would.
I don't know about feral, but they won't be happy. They'll be like some of the NPL clubs. They want more of a say on what's going on.
Oh, if you go through, having an amazing season like Brisbane has, and then you know, the AFL takes away your home ground advantage for the grand final, you'd be pretty upset by the whole situation.
Tiff, the AFLW. Absolutely, an outstanding success this year. Your top three highlights, Tiff.
Sorry, I just called you Ty, your brother's name.
Oh, I either get called Ty, Shane, or Roy. So
just never call him late for dinner. That's all that matters.
That's all right, Tiff.
Oh, I think watching Sarah Tex Perkins,
so yep.
She's got the same nickname as the Adelaide Crows captain. She's just a gun. I just love watching her play. She reminds me of Plugger. Every single time, just she runs out, how she goes about it. She's got a great attitude. Erin Phillips is another one I just love watching. And I think Daisy Pierce, you know, she just leads by example. She's just always been up there at the top level. She's a captain of Melbourne. She's just had a sensational season, and I'm watching her cut up other teams through the middle. But there's so many others. I mean, I love watching Sabrina Frederick-Traub, the 20-year-old.
Yes.
She looks about 28. She plays like a 28-year-old.
She does.
She's a gun from Brisbane. There's so many players, you know, all over the competition in the eight teams. So, it's hard to pick a top three.
And your Channel 9 show, you've derived great enjoyment out of hosting that.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah, look, absolutely. Look, I've wanted this for the last 20 years, so... not for me to be hosting a show, but for women's competition to be up and professional as it is. So to be part of it from the, you know, a small angle is fantastic. I love it, and I love, you know, meeting. I mean, just what I love about my job is interviewing and meeting, sporting people who I admire, and I get to understand their story, and I get to be inspired by it and share that inspiration to other people. So with other people. So it's been a fantastic experience, and we've got one show left next Sunday, which will be obviously our grand final wrap-up.
And what a grand final it's expected to be. What's your tip?
Oh, it's a tough one. I think watching Adelaide today come from behind and then now got a little bit of momentum, I think possibly Adelaide will upset Brisbane. I think Brisbane's got quite a few injuries. And, Adelaide's top tier, as Brisbane's is, but I just think Adelaide have got a little bit of extra class.
There you go. Tiffany has put it on the rack. She's just called it. And we're going to stand on that. We're going to follow you up and find out just how close to the mark you are, Tiffany. Thanks for joining us on The Ultimate Wrap.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And good luck with the show. And once again, isn't it fabulous to have finally realised a dream, something you've been waiting to achieve over the, 20 years? That's remarkable, Tiffany. Bravo. Well done.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Pleasure.
Thanks, Tiff.
24 minutes after 6, this is The Ultimate Wrap on SEN. Coming up 27 after 6, George Danicki in here. Emma Notta-Francesco is not in the studio, but Tal Karp certainly is.
Yeah, where's Emma? Where is Emma?
She's out gallivanting, trying to cover what's happening with the V8 supercars. She's in New South Wales, the truth be told.
Do you think Anne and Vincenzo would be listening in?
Quite possibly.
They're Emma's parents.
I know, before we go to Tom Callis, who's leading the Rebel NPL lobby.
Got a cricket update, George.
Give us the latest on the cricket.
Yes, India 6 for 466. They lead by 14 runs. Pujara 176 and Saha not out on 76. An incredible stumbling block. Is Pujara.
Let's call it roadblock.
He's put an absolute masterclass on in concentration, Tom. An extraordinary performance.
Well, let's talk the round ball code. Tom Callis, one of the organisers of a big meeting coming up tomorrow in Melbourne, which features 81 disgruntled NPL clubs, is on the line, and he joins us for the first time. Tom, how are you?
Hello, everyone. Hello, George.
All these clubs are here. They want a bigger say in how the game is being run in Australia. What chance have you got to achieve some meaningful outcomes tomorrow night?
Look, we've got every chance to do that, I think, because it's what we are doing is actually quite historic. Historic in the sense that we've got all states, all clubs, practically all clubs coming down to meet tomorrow in Melbourne. But more importantly, it's the association we've formed is no different to the A-League Association of clubs that they've formed, no different to the players' association, the professional player associations they've formed, again, no difference. So sometimes people, I think, overstretch what it's about. It's not a rebel thing at all. It's all the stakeholders in football, in probably the most important tier, I think, in football under the A-League, coming together and saying, we've been neglected. It's been over a decade now where there's been no focus, no funding. We're funding football from the bottom up in Australia, which we all know, which I think is quite unsustainable. And people are struggling, and we need to bring that focus and that intensity onto the stage to try and make people understand that there's repercussions and there's flow-on effects every time we do something different from the top tier. There's flow-on effects.
Tom, it's Troy Zantuck. Great to have you on the show. Tom, what do you think, in a perfect world, is achievable, and do you expect any pushback from the governing body?
Not at all, actually. I'll tell you what, I think they're going to embrace this, and they have already in many, many ways. Now, we've already met with the PFA, an important stakeholder in the football landscape. David Gallup, Emma Highwood, the management team from the FFA have already reached out to us, and dialogue's already begun. We're all already linked up and discussing these issues with FIFA in Zurich. So I don't think there's anything untoward, and I think we'll probably get a good outcome because this is really about getting people together around a table and talk about solutions that impact everybody. Because, again, everyone's lost sight of the fact there's a massive football ecosystem under the top tier, and we need to include that in the discussions. That's basically what we're trying to do.
Hey, Tom, there really is a massive football ecosystem. We've just received a text that I thought I'd get you to comment on. It's from Bob from Narre Warren, and he says, there are 80 NPL clubs nationally, sounds like a lot, but there are 300 community clubs in Victoria alone. Who's representing their interests?
Okay, I'll tell you. Two things. Around the world, the football ecosystem is fully linked. It's a pyramid from the very bottom to the very top. In Australia, we've chosen not to do that for various reasons, but that's for another time. And so my view has always been, like here in Melbourne and Victoria, from the end of this year, there's full integration with all the tiers of football. So NPL teams NPL 2 teams will be relegated. State League 1 teams will come up. So these clubs have got a pathway. They can develop themselves, and if they aspire to proceed and grow and expand, they can certainly do that. Now, it doesn't happen beyond the state where there's actually a cap, as you know. So the community clubs have a mechanism. If they feel like they're ambitious and they want to proceed, they can certainly do that. The parameters are there for that. Now, what we're saying, again, in the rest of the planet, the football culture has grown over a long time where these things have worked and worked very, very well. We've got to start looking at doing that here. We're not that unique, for instance. I mean, if you remember, Tay, a few years ago, the FFV and FFV board was going to actually implement what we felt was an aberrant model of regional clubs where the clubs beneath those clubs could not expand or could not grow or could not get promoted. That doesn't happen anywhere on the planet. So we need to allow clubs, ambitious clubs that can work hard, raise money, capital to proceed and grow. So those clubs have an avenue to do that. That's what I'm saying.
Are we talking promotion relegation too?
Yes, yes. Community clubs can certainly get promoted all the way to NPL. In the current environment in Victoria, from the end of this year, there's full integration.
So that's a first.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And we battled for that system 3.5 years ago when we took the Federation to court to stop an aberrant model being impacted on us, which would have actually destroyed the fabric of football clubs in Victoria. That's where we had to come out then intervene. This time we have to intervene again because the FFA, if you'll recall, 2.5 weeks ago, came out publicly and said, they've got the wrong model, they've got the wrong financial model. And now we're going to swing in consultants again at, what, other $300,000-$400,000 to tell us that we've got it wrong and we've got to change the model. So what I'm saying, guys, we need to stop thinking that Australia is a unique environment where the parameters of football, global football, don't apply here. And that's why FIFA's intervening, because I think they've had enough as well.
To be a successful meeting tomorrow, what do you want?
Okay. First thing is I want to make sure everybody meets and greets each other, because there's a lot of people that don't know each other. There's a lot of incredible women and men, presidents around the country that have been doing very, very tough, and they want to be heard, and they want to have a venue to actually explain themselves. Their issues and concerns are the same everywhere.
Is this an invitation-only event tomorrow night?
Only members. Okay, we're going to have the following. Members only. The membership that's actually applied to be a member of the association, they can come, because what happens is we're going to have votes. We're going to decide positions. We're going to table, for example, that we have already asked the FFA to invite us at the Congress. As you probably might have noticed in the press today, yesterday, and so forth, that push has come from FIFA as well. So we're in good company, I think. So I expect to get a positive response back from the FFA saying, we welcome you on board, come to the Congress so we can discuss reforming football. And I'll say this again, before the A-League era, there were a lot of mistakes made. During the A-League era, there's a lot of mistakes made. I don't think we have another chance at this. We've got to get it right. And so tomorrow's message to all the members will be, we need to be very professional and measured and consultative. Nothing's going to be rushed. We're going to commission studies. We're going to do modelling. We're going to work with all the stakeholders in football, the FFA, the A-League clubs, the PFA, community clubs, the state federations, and work out a system for football which will grow in the long term. We need to build football culture.
Tom, financially, I'm just interested to know, is there a chance FIFA could possibly help bankroll the national second division competition?
Look, I'll be honest, we haven't explored that at all, because I think there's enough money, to be frank, within the country. The A-League model that we've built in Australia is unaffordable. I think people have realised that. Smarter heads have realised that a bit earlier as well. The fact of the matter is we've got a high-cost model for the A-League, which takes money out of everybody's pockets. It's unsustainable. So it doesn't just cost the A-League clubs the millions that they lose every year. It costs all of us, state federations, mums and dads, clubs. It costs all of us. We have to scale back the cost model for the A-League and head office staff in Sydney. I mean, the thing is, I say this a lot, it's great to have investment bankers and lawyers on the boards of the FFA, but these people cannot design aeroplanes. Lawyers are great in law courts, but they cannot design an airplane.
Tal is a lawyer, and she's looking at me kind of funny here.
We've actually got a lawyer and an aeronautical engineer in the studio, Tom.
Can I have someone that can design planes? Because this is the problem we have, guys. We've had incredible business expertise at the FFA board, but these people do not understand how to design an airplane, which means how do you design a fully linked ecosystem in the football sense. You see? And this is why I get alarmed when I see more investment bankers and more lawyers going into these positions, in board positions, because we need people that can design these ecosystems. So we need to dig them out. We're going to commission studies and try and get this right. See, when they built the Crawford Report back then, if you recall, that was an excellent piece of work. But we didn't implement that, as you probably all well know. I mean, some of the recommendations were we need a sustainable top tier that's playing out of boutique stadiums. What are we going to do? We build an expensive model, and we're trying to play teams that are massive stadiums, which are costing everyone the earth, not just the A-League clubs. It costs the entire ecosystem a lot of money. So the money that the federations feed up to the FFA comes out of all our pockets. And we've got to be careful, guys. If we don't build a sustainable football model soon, I think it's pretty dire for football in Australia. It's really that concerning.
All right. Well, you've given us an insight into what's happening tomorrow. We wish you well. You're going to have 81 disgruntled types coming together for the first time. And you want to create a bit of history. We wish you all the very best. Tom Callis.
Thank you so much, guys. Have a good week.
Thank you. That's part of the Ultimate Wrap, where the time is now 22 minutes to 7. Ah, yes. Shebeki allows us to play that, but he's in America gallivanting around, having a great time with the family. We wish him well and safe travels. And as for Emma, well, she's working in New South Wales. So we've recruited
But I've got to say, Tal has stepped into the breach and he's doing a treat.
Former Matilda, former captain of the women's team at the Victory. In fact, the first captain the club had. Is with us, and she's a lawyer these days.
Oh, I know.
So, Tom, engineer.
A real underachiever.
She's not an aeronautical engineer, no, but she's a lawyer.
And your parents must be so disappointed in you.
I think they are, actually. No grandchildren yet. It's all about the grandchildren these days.
Well, speaking of disappointment, though, folks, the scale of 1 to 10, we're going to have to go all the way to Sky Sports in the United Kingdom to catch up with Max Rushton, because I want him to give us an insight into just how desperate the fans, or some of the fans at Arsenal, are feeling at the moment after what I, in my mind, was a shock loss overnight away to West Brom. Max, welcome to the Ultimate Wrap.
Hello. I thought you were going to, as an intro goes, I thought, speaking of disappointment, here's Max.
Max, I wouldn't do that to you.
Got it bang on. You've absolutely nailed it. I apologise.
We workshopped it, Max. But
mate, were there any protests? Were there any protests?
There are pictures in the Sunday papers this morning. Arsenal are—they're now fifth in the Premier League. They're 5 points off fourth place. They've qualified for the Champions League every season for the last 650 years. And Arsene Wenger's been their manager for all that time, since the Norman Conquest, actually.
He started a new religion in Arsene. We trust.
Exactly. It was just—it sort of, you know, when Protestantism and Catholicism split off, there was an Arsene Wenger.
It's called a schism
there as well.
It was called a schism.
but do you know what, right? I've met Arsene Wenger a couple of times. This guy, he's such a great man, okay? And he's one of those people, unlike yourself and myself, you know, he doesn't waste a word. Like every word he says, okay, every word he says, you know, makes sense. But the guy, and the other thing is, so he's been Arsene Wenger for a long time. He always qualifies for the Champions League, but they haven't won a title for, since 2005, something like that, a long time ago. And the Arsenal fans are getting increasingly desperate. And what's interesting now is, because in my mind, Arsenal are a successful football team, but if you're 15 years old, 16 years old, you can't remember them winning the Premier League, you know, which is, so there's a whole sort of set now of Arsenal fans who don't really know what real success is. They've won the FA Cup. So Arsene Wenger, the fans are getting increasingly angry, and it's not 100% want him to go. And I've always supported Arsene Wenger, mainly because the sort of most vocal anti-Arsene Wenger
people are sort of the most hateful people in the world anyway. You know, so you don't really want to have tea with them. You know, it's like Brexit. You'd rather have tea with the Remainers.
Great analogy there, Maxie.
And that's how I choose my politics. And so, but look, yesterday at West Brom, two idiots with far too much money on their hands both put out banners. You know, you can get an aeroplane and put a banner on the back of it.
Yeah.
Normally, you know, when it's on the beach in Bayside, you know, it's saying, you know, look, there's a barbecue at, you know, Bennings or whatever it is.
Will you marry me, Max?
Or wear Speedos more often. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Coles avocados are only $600 today.
That's right. You
know, that kind of thing. But one of them says, no contract, Wenger out, with a hashtag, because, you know, that's important these days. And the other one says, in Arsenal we trust, hashtag respect AW. You just kind of think, wouldn't it have been better if the two people, whoever got together, just sat down and said, well, you're doing an anti-Arsene Wenger banner, I'm doing a pro one. Why don't we just do neither and have, like, a really nice dinner? Because I think it probably costs quite a lot of money.
Oh, it would have, absolutely.
There's a lot of anti-arse and pro-arse in Arsenal land, isn't there?
Absolutely, no doubt about it.
There really is. It's a great opportunity to say arse as many times.
Oh, yeah, I just wanted to slip that in there, Max.
I spotted that. You're not the lawyer of the team.
No. Tala's the lawyer, and she's been sitting quietly in the background thinking, I'm not going to say anything to do with Arsene at all.
The only pyromaniac to coach an EPL team.
By the way... I'm just going to ask Tal, which EPL team do you support?
I don't give legal advice. Oh, sorry, what was that?
Which EPL team do you support?
Well, I could have said Arsenal, couldn't I?
Yeah, if you were smart, you wouldn't have said anything.
Yes, that's true. That's absolutely true.
Max, take us through what's likely to happen. If they finish outside the four, what's likely to happen?
Well, Arsene Wenger has said, I've got some quotes from here, on his future. He knows, the interesting thing is, unlike any other manager, it's up to him. So most people, you know, have some lunatic chairman who sacks you regardless of how well you've done. But Arsene Wenger, it's his choice. And he said, look, you will know soon. They lost 3-1 to West Brom, by the way. And West Brom, every season, once they get to 40 points, which is sort of what you need to survive, they give up playing football. So the fact that, you know, they lost 3-1 to West Brom. He said, how soon will you know? Very soon. But he's not telling you when. So I think they got absolutely annihilated in the Champions League. They lost 10-2 on aggregate to Bayern Munich. The away leg was actually more embarrassing than the home leg, but that's ridiculous. You know, if they normally should lose about 7-2 on aggregate to Bayern Munich. My hunch now is that he will go. And it's, in a way, what you need is, I wouldn't be surprised if he stays, but a lot of people are saying now, if he came out now and said, okay, I'm going to go, then the vitriol would end. Everyone would realise what a brilliant manager he was. And then Arsenal fans would start panicking about how they'd replace him, because a lot of people seem to think that it will be what happened at Manchester United. So Alex Ferguson left, and then United were just rubbish for, you know, David Moyes couldn't do it.
And wasn't David Moyes the chosen one?
He was the chosen one. Oh. Unfairly, what Sir Alex did was he made sure...
There was a vacuum after he left.
No pressure.
Well, he did that, but he was also at every game, you know, and he had a camera fixed on him. So whenever Man United conceded a goal, the camera went to Sir Alex Ferguson's face and then the current manager. So for Moyes and Van Gaal. So what Arsene Wenger needs to do is leave the squad in tatters, quit, and then sit in the crowd and just watch it, and then watch every time that Arsenal concede a goal for the next 3 years. I think that's what should happen. But he might go, but I kind of hope he stays, because
Max, it'll be a better story if he stays. You touched on Manchester United. I've got to ask you, one of my favourite players and one of the famous characters in football in Britain for years was Roy Keane. Now, he's come out overnight and absolutely blasted Jose Mourinho after Jose did what he normally does. He complained about the congestion surrounding fixtures, notably Manchester United. Now, this is after they won their game against Rostov in the Europa League. You would understand him complaining if they lost, but they've won and Mourinho's still complaining. And have a listen to this. This is what Roy had to say.
so much rubbish in my life. Why do we have to listen to that garbage? It's just utter nonsense what he's talking about. He's manager of Manchester United, one of the biggest clubs on the planet. The squad he's got, the players, keeps moaning about fixtures and fatigue. We were just looking at some of the cup draws they've had. They've had an easy ride in the cup. Some good draws, a lot of home draws. The guy's talking absolute nonsense. Never heard so much rubbish in my life. Maybe the club's too big for him. He can't deal with all these demands of the matches. What matches? Cup competitions? Man United reserves could have won that game tonight. I'm sick to death of him.
And that's right after St. Patrick's Day too, huh?
I thought Roy was describing our show.
I was worried about that.
Max, what do you reckon?
Well, that's sort of the most mild-mannered Roy Keane's ever been, I think, listening to that. That's sort of him. That's him being calm, Roy. Look, Roy Keane was an unbelievable footballer. Like, he was and in some ways quite underrated because he was so hard and tough that his ability was underrated. As a manager, he himself has not really achieved huge amounts in management. As a pundit, he is brilliant because... I think Australians are probably better at this. There are a lot of pundits here who don't really say anything. You know, they can talk for 5 hours without giving you an answer about anything. But Roy, you know he's going to give you gold. And, you know, does Jose have a point? Like, Jose moans about everything all the time. Right? I mean, that's...
You know, when he says something, Liverpool fans laugh and laugh and laugh.
You know his favourite artwork, don't you?
No.
The Mona Lisa.
Oh, very good. Max, before you leave us, let's do a recap of the Champions League draw. Who do you reckon's going to win? Juventus, Barcelona?
You'd say Barcelona in that one.
You would say that. Okay.
Quick fire.
Borussia Dortmund and Monaco.
This is a really tough one to call, but Monaco have done very well. They look very good against Spurs. They look good against Man City. By the fact that I've seen more of them than I've seen of Borussia Dortmund, I'm going to go Monaco.
Atletico Madrid v, wait for it, Leicester City.
Well, I mean, the fact that Leicester City are in the last eight of the Champions League is so ridiculous. I mean, they won the league. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's totally baffling. Sevilla they beat in the last round are such a good football team. Unless they have been like hopeless this year, they sacked Ranieri and then suddenly they got brilliant again. and they won again yesterday against West Ham. So that, you know, they look like they're inching away from survival. Their manager Craig Shakespeare's won every game, I think, that he's been in charge of. Atletico Madrid play a similar type of football to Leicester. You know, they play this counter-attacking style. They defend deep. And Leicester are pretty poor against teams like that. But I don't know. I just can't write Leicester off. Atletico should definitely win, but I think Leicester will.
The headline could read, if they get spanked, Leicester, Shakespearean tragedy.
I love that. Shakespeare and football.
Bayern Munich.
Right. Since Craig Shakespeare got that job, like, every single journalist has been, like, Googling Shakespeare plays to find some witty quote of a play they've never heard of. I'm full up of them. I'd like to, you know, I'm just saying.
Moving
I'm full
on.
Up of my Shakespearean. Yeah, carry on.
Bayern Munich versus Real Madrid.
Oh, that is just so hard. It's just so hard to call, you know? I mean, it's really difficult, this one. So I'm going to go Real Madrid, but a lot of people are saying Bayern. Could be either. I haven't got a clue.
Okay. We're going to make it a lot easier now. There are three more EPL games to complete the round before the international break. Let's do this pretty quickly. Middlesbrough, that hasn't been able to score nearly for the last 12 games, are taking on a side called Manchester United, but it's United without Zlatan and Pogba.
Yeah, no Zlatan. Well, Zlatan elbowed someone in the face. He hit my elbow, so that was nice. But Zlatan's a total joy. Middlesbrough haven't scored a goal, like you said, in about 1,000 years. But they have sacked their manager, Karanka. So normally when a manager goes, the players suddenly wake up in the first game. I think United win 2-0.
Wow. Okay. Tottenham v Southampton. And this is the Tottenham side without Harry Kane.
Yeah, no Harry Kane. I think Son will play up front. He did well when he came on in the FA Cup against Millwall. Chelsea really frustratingly got a last-minute winner at Stoke.
Yeah.
So they're 13 points.
Gary Cahill scored the goal, huh? Big header?
For the neutrals who like Spurs, which is me.
And me.
Chelsea not to win that game. Yeah. Look, Spurs should win, but Southampton are a good side. I will go 2-1 Spurs.
All right. And Man City v Liverpool.
Oh, it's a tricky one, this one, isn't it?
Mate, we don't get you all the way from United Kingdom just to come on and just smudge your way through
that whoopee cushion's getting a fair workout, George.
Getting a serious workout.
Hey, look, I just want to be honest. I just want to be honest, you know. Look, it could be 1,000 all. It could be 500 all. There'll be loads of goals. Guaranteed goals. If it's nil-nil, you can ring me up and just abuse me for 5 minutes next week.
Max Rushton, there's no way we're going to do that.
Oh, okay, that's because you said it would be a disappointment. This is my one and only time out. I've had a great time. I'd like to thank my mum, my dad, my future father-in-law who runs Blue Dog Gallery, the concourse in Beaumaris. Hi, Colin. Anyone else?
Bye, Max.
My new sister, aunt, brother, Ellie, Jay's friend. 2-1 Man City.
Good on you, my boy. That's Max Rushton joining us for the Ultimate Wrap from Sky Sports in the United Kingdom. It's been a joy. Thank you, Max. Really appreciate it. A few minutes now to 7 o'clock. I think we have a couple of commitments.
Yeah,
I just want to take an opportunity to say to Tal, fantastic job, well done.
Can I just say
she
to
came
Tal,
in really nervous but just delivered.
I would say outstanding.
Oh,
11 out of 10 for your really? Performance. And
and he's a tough.
We can hang out again.
He's a tough judge.
We can. I've really enjoyed it, Tal.
Thank you.
We believe the Ultimate Wrap is coming back in some other form
soon.
Thought
that was the Ultimate Wrap. Sorry.
This is version of the Ultimate Wrap.
And just for our cricket fans, George,
yes, give us a score.
There's many out there. India currently 6 for 474, with Pujara again not out, 182, and Saha batting beautifully on 78.
At this rate, they might declare. If they continue to score runs.
Yeah, they just can't get that breakthrough. So for all the cricket fans out there, India 6 for 474.